is chilling. What more can I say? Top villain.
What's up, everybody? This your boy Bill Bellamy. Welcome to Top Billing, the number one podcast for the movement, the culture, and the discussion. Today, we have the next big thing in Hollywood, actor, comedian Melvin Gregg. I've been watching this man put in good work, just keep grinding, keep shining. Just happened to see him in the latest movie of House Party, which I feel personally he stole the film. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Top Billing, Melvin Gregg, everybody. VA's finest. Let's go.
Appreciate it.
In the building.
They
tried to say, hey, man, you said you was going to come and you made it.
I made it.
You made it happen. You a man of your word.
Yeah, man,
shout out to VA in the building. They always, I always got to give y'all some love because y'all got a lot of talent coming up out that little area. It's a
little,
it's a cute little area right there. It's a lot like from Chris Brown to Trey Songz, A.I., Missy Elliott, Timbaland. Yeah. It's a lot of y'all. How do you get out of VA?
How do you get out?
How do you just say, you know, growing up in Portsmouth, right? It's in Portsmouth.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you just say, yo, one day I'm going to be an actor out of VA? You know what I'm saying?
Man, I didn't realize I wanted to be an actor until I was like maybe 20.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was in college at the time and I was like, I can't do it here. I had found like a little agent on Facebook and I was doing stuff for like the 700 Club, like was it like reenactment type stuff.
Okay.
But I was like, yeah, if I really want to do this, I can't do it here. I gotta go to LA.
You gotta come to LA. This is where the big boys
do it. So I sold all my stuff and then just moved out here.
Just 2011, just came out here.
Just came out here.
Fuck
sold all
it,
my
fuck
stuff.
Everything.
Had like $7,000. Came out here. I never been here. Never met anybody.
You ain't know nobody?
Nah.
Oh, I like your attitude.
I was walking down the street with a suitcase, but I was excited. And I was like, yo, I'm going to go to the car rental spot. I ain't know that they wouldn't rent me a car because I want 25. Right. So I was like, damn. But then I just saw the palm trees. Somebody rolled by playing Tupac. I was like, man, I'm here. I'm good.
Yo, and that's the thing about California, though. It's a vibe, though. You know what I mean? Honestly, I've always dreamed of coming out here. I remember watching it on TV. That was my first impression of California.
Because
I grew up in Jersey. We don't have palm trees on the East Coast. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And we don't have, you know, sort of like this beach-like backdrop and what have you. So when I came out here, I felt the same. Like, yo, man, I think this is the spot for me. But everybody's road is different. And what I've noticed about doing your research on you is, like, you utilize the internet in a special way. And I think it was fantastic. Tell us how you just decided to, like, yo, let me get my face out here.
So I moved out here to act. So I just went the traditional acting route of, you know, I would go on these different sites and I would apply to, you know, audition for stuff. And I would do commercials, I do like little student films, short films, films that don't pay, stuff that just give you food and a credit type stuff. And it was cool, it was a good experience, but I wasn't getting the opportunity to do real stuff because I didn't have a real agent.
Right.
But I couldn't get the real agent because I hadn't done the real stuff.
Right.
So it was like a catch-22, and it was like, I can keep doing this, you know, low-budget stuff, but it's not going to get me to where I want to go. There's a million people out here, you know, trying to do the same thing. I got to find a way to separate myself, gain some type of leverage.
Okay.
And I was looking at, I tell people all the time, like, I saw Lil Romeo online. And at the time, he ain't Lil Romeo no more, Romeo.
He grown now. But at the time, he was Lil Romeo.
Yeah, yeah. He was, I don't know if he was. I saw Romeo Miller online.
What up, Thursday?
And Romeo had a movie coming out like every 3 weeks. Well, I don't know if it was coming out. He was shooting movies all the time on his, I would just say, I don't know if it was Instagram or not. I was like, damn, why is he working so much? And I would just look at people that was working a lot. I was like, what do they have that I don't have?
Okay.
You know, outside of just the opportunity and why do they have the opportunity? And I seen they had an audience. I was like, yeah, people following for music. They said, and others, same thing with comedians. Like, they got an audience.
Correct.
So they hold more value to a production.
Absolutely.
So I was like, how can I build an audience? And around the same time, I did a commercial. Right? No, I didn't do it. It wasn't a commercial. I did this movie called Cleveland Family Reunion. It was like a janky version of Roscoe, Walking Home Roscoe Jenkins.
Right.
Yeah, it was like a janky
budget
version
of $5. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. And
two cameras.
It was this girl, man, it was
bad. I know.
It was crazy.
We all had those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So people liked that movie though, so you know, I'm grateful for it. But the people that saw it, it was a girl in Virginia and she was like, dang, I wish I could do stuff like that. I was like, just do stuff on the app, like use Vine, like do some stuff up there. And I didn't even know how to work Vine. Like, I didn't know it was a front facing camera. So the first time I tried to use it, I had the camera turned backwards like this, and I'm like, man, I can't get myself in the frame. Like, man, I ain't fucking with this. Can I?
Yeah, you can.
Oh yeah, well, I ain't messing with this. Right. And she started using it, and she blew up. And then like 2 months, she probably had like 300,000-400,000 followers. I was like, yo, it's something here.
Uh oh.
Yeah, and then she had told me she got like $7,000 for like a Klondike commercial, some little a post she did. And at the time, I had 4 roommates in a 2-bedroom with like a window unit AC. We all on food stamps, like trying to figure it out.
Struggling.
Yeah, and I was like, $7,000?
Shit, I could get 14.
Boy, so I was like, yo, all these little auditions I'm going to, I'm going to commit myself to this other stuff.
Right.
I'm going to give myself 2 years, see if I can make something happen.
Right.
And just commit to it. And the thing that I loved about Vine at the time was, you could only shoot in the app. Like, you couldn't shoot it anywhere else and upload it. You can't shoot it on your phone and your camera roll and upload it. You have to shoot through the app.
Okay.
And you couldn't edit. Like, if you messed up, you got to go do it again. So it was very limiting.
So y'all had to be on your A.
But also, how I saw it was an even playing field, because I didn't have production resources. But we could only use our phone. So that means it's an even playing field for me and anybody else on the app. And the only thing that's going to determine who's successful is creativity. So I was like, I could figure this out. I had never done comedy, but I looked at what was working on the site, and I reverse engineered it. It was like, okay, this is why this works. Okay, comedy comes in threes. Okay, this is catch people off guard. This is relatable. And I just kind of broke it down in a scientific type way, the science of comedy. And from there, I could plug and play and figure out like what could work, drawing from my experiences and just what worked online. So from there, I just started storyboarding all the ideas. I had a notebook, probably like 100 different vines. I was like, all right, I got to approach it from a marketing standpoint. Let me just shoot 20 of them at least, so I got a bank. So if some start popping.
You got them already.
Yeah. I got a fully loaded clip. But I can't come out the gate with heat, because people will go to my page and I won't have any audience retention because I don't have any other posts. So I was like, let me just post 3 or 4 okay videos and then start posting some heat. So then my 3 or 4 could get some traction. I could just build off of it. And the first one I posted got traction. I was like, oh, shit, I got some. So I was like, yeah. And I just kind of hit the ground running from there, just creating content every day. And from just creating content that was respected by the people on the site, I ended up meeting more people. And after a while, we just kind of formed a crew.
Yeah, that's how I got wind of you, actually, through social media. I didn't know who you were at the time, but I just always saw you with these 4 cats. It was like you said, it was like a comedy team. Mm-hmm. And y'all was all in each other's videos and y'all was funny. And I was like, oh, yo, they must be the new comedians or something. You know what I'm saying? And every guy or girl that I have interviewed recently that's of your class, mm-hmm. you guys have social media as your Def Comedy Jam. Like, mm-hmm. and what I love about that is there's no ceilings on your creativity. Like, you could think of it, put it in your phone, put it up.
Yeah, the turnaround time is crazy.
Next day. Like, you could think of a joke, you could think of a skit, you could cut it together, or you could put it up raw and let it fly and it could go. That's what I love about your era that I didn't have coming up. And it's like, you guys who are winning from it, I think it is remarkable. I mean, even from people that are like music people,
mm-hmm.
people that like got beats, they put them up and somebody might hear your beat and be like, man, I'm like, yo, that works.
There's real gatekeepers on the internet outside of like an algorithm.
Yeah.
But yeah, anybody got an opportunity to be heard or seen.
Yeah.
And like you said, the turnaround time is so quick. You could test your material the same way as a comedian would go to these different clubs and test their material out.
Correct.
I'm able to test my jokes out in front of millions of people. Like, if I posted, like, at one point when we was heavy into Vine, if I didn't get 100,000 likes within the day, I would delete it. So if it went 100,000, we call it a delete. So it's like, that's how big we were, like, shooting. And we was gaining millions of followers and not even realizing the levity of, like, millions of people watching it. We was just competing with one another. And the numbers were just numbers. You know, 1 million, 1.1, we get 100,000 a month. In order to get 1 million every year, a new million, you got to get 100,000 a month at this certain amount a day. It was just, like, broken down that way. And it wasn't until I took a step back and realized, like, the impact. I don't really want to say the impact. Well, it was a moment, but just the amount of people we were, you know, touching with this type of stuff.
Lots of people, and it's worldwide, man. I really admire you for that. And all the guys in your, like King Batch, Desi Banks, I ran it, B. Simone, she, Jess Hilarious. These cats are like really diligent about their social media platforms. And then, you know, they're starting to do other things, you know, whether they're getting paid or, you know, selling products or this, that, and the other. Now it's a machine. You feel me?
Yeah. When you got those eyes, you could either sell to a production, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, selling yourself as a talent, or you could sell straight to the consumer as far as creating product and, you know, selling it online and making your bread that way. So it's definitely a tool.
How did you start making your transition, though? Because it looks like to me, from the outside looking in, I saw you in some videos really funny on the internet. Next thing I seen you in the TV show. Like, it was just like, oh, shit, bam, boom.
Yeah.
Was it like that or no?
It depends. So I was trying to double dip. Mm-hmm. I always knew I wanted to act. I didn't like the social media. I understood what it was, but I didn't want to get caught up in it. Mm-hmm. So it was like a couple of series I did while I was shooting videos, but it was nothing really, it wasn't like pronounced roles. It'd be like, I did a show called Unreal where it was like, I was a guest star for a few episodes, but it was just lines here and there. It was nothing really substantial. And I did another show that probably nobody over 12 saw.
Right.
It was called Freaky Zone Hulu. But I really couldn't get my foot in as an actor because I was still, my main focus was creating social media content.
Okay.
And if you ask anybody who create content online, you have to be consistent, like on a daily basis. You take a week off, you fall out of the algorithm, people be like, you fell off. It's just like, you have to be consistent with it.
Man.
And I was kind of dedicated to that. But then I was like, I'm gonna go all in. Because I went and visited like Facebook Spaces and all these big production companies that they got out on like Venice Beach. And it was like, they would have these big infrastructures, like physical infrastructures, buildings with offices and all of these people. And I was like, this is what I want. I want to build like a production studio for digital content. So I was like, what's the first step? I got a 4,000 square foot space. And I was like, I'm going to build out my offices. I did it myself. I built our offices. I built the sets, makeup room. All of this stuff. I'm like, this is how I'm gonna do it. I put a plan together and I was doing really good. I targeted Facebook because that was like the fastest growing thing and it was a different audience. Like, I aunts and uncles on Facebook that ain't on Instagram. That was a whole nother audience.
Right.
So I hit the ground running doing Facebook and I was making good money, man. And I was gaining fast. I did 100 million views a week on original content 4 weeks straight. 100 million views a week,
Damn.
And that was equaling good money too. And I was like the fastest growing page on Facebook, but I was depressed. I wasn't happy because I get obsessive with stuff.
Right.
So I'm in there, this windowless office for days on end on Adderall just editing stuff. I'm doing YouTube videos, I'm just editing, I'm shooting, I got three shows running, I'm doing contents, I'm doing sketch, I'm breaking out analytics, I'm handling the distribution, back end, all of this stuff. And I'm like, this isn't why I'm here. And first time ever, like I lived in the projects my whole life until I moved here. I got a six-figure check coming in the mail, and it was coming monthly, but I didn't care. Like, it didn't affect me when it hit, and I was still sad.
Right.
And I was like, all right, this ain't it. So I just made a conscious decision to stop. Like, and I was at a peak. It's not like I was falling off. I was at a peak, and I just stopped. I stopped creating content, and I was like, I'm focusing full force on just acting.
On your dream.
Yeah, and it's so ironic the next month. Like, and it never really happened as fast as people. Mind you, I had already been out here like seven, eight years. But after like committing and being intentional with my focus, that next month I booked High Flying Bird, which was a Steven Soderbergh film, Steven Soderbergh Oscar winning, you know, director.
Mm-hmm.
And I booked American Vandal, both of them with Netflix projects. So it was a series and a movie. I booked them on the same day. And same day my nephew was born too. It was January 18th. And I was like, all right, this is just kind of reassuring and reaffirming.
Oh yeah, it's an affirmation,
that,
bro.
Yeah, that this is. I mean, what I need to focus on. So from that time forward, there's no looking back. I probably made like three or four sketches between that time and now, where it's just like, I'm just focused on this. I'm not doing the social media stuff no more. No shade to it.
No,
but it's
no,
just like,
but you, well, you
I gotta
have,
be intentional.
Because the thing about it, and you know, I can relate to this, is, you know, I came into the game completely different than you, right? and social media came in later. Mm-hmm. So I learned that it requires a lot of time, bro. Like, damn, and I don't even take it to the level you take it to is beyond me. Like, I wouldn't even be able to do nothing else with my life. Like, because it's, like you said, you're doing behind the scenes, you cutting, you're doing, it's a job. Like, people don't realize, like, the people that do really well, they commit to it, right? But if you want to be an actor, you cannot disperse all that energy everywhere. Like you said, you're not happy. You came to a point, all right, you're making this money, but you ain't really, it ain't feeding your soul like you wanted it to. You know what I'm saying? Right. But when you acting and you're doing what you want to do, it gives you like a euphoric feeling, kind of sort of. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just, it's like a natural high. You know what I mean? And you know you're in the right place. It feels easy.
Yeah.
You ain't stressing. You know what I'm saying?
You do it for free. If you do it for free, it ain't, you know, it's cliche to say it ain't work if you do it for free. If you love it, it ain't work. But if you do it for free, it ain't work either. So.
But if I get paid and I do it like I want to do it for free, I like it.
Yeah,
it's great. That's what I'm talking about, because we're not stupid out here. We're trying to earn some goddamn money. Now, one of the things that I'm going to say about you that I find to be very interesting, right? Mm-hmm. You are very comedic to me, but you have a really, like, sort of, I don't want to say necessarily a darker side, but a more cooler, sort of laid-back side of you that's different than the comedic side of you, right?
Yeah.
So I got a chance to see different roles, like, I love your role. For those who love Snowfall, they coming back season six.
You want me to tell you something real quick that like fucked me up today?
What's that?
I've been dead since season four. Right, right. That's 2020. I've been dead
since season four.
Since season, when you die, you not on the email chains. You're done. Right, you're dead.
Right.
I wake up this morning. I got a copy of season six, episode 10, season finale, in my email box. The script.
You dead, bro. You ain't, you, they not talking about you no more, bro.
But it's just like, it ain't even that. It's just like, and it's watermarked with my name on it. It's like, I'm a fan of the show. Before I was on it, it was my favorite show.
Absolutely.
It's like, yo, y'all giving me the season finale right here, and just, I gotta use my, like, just willpower to not read it.
You gotta read it,
and
though.
I gotta wait.
Don't tell us nothing, though.
I gotta wait for if I'm not gonna read it, man.
You gonna let
I
it
I need
sit.
To try to delete it.
Ah, don't delete it, man. It's golden. But let me just say this, because I'm a huge fan of Snowfall.
Can't spoil it for myself.
Listen to me. I am a huge fan of Snowfall. I love what John Singleton did with this story about this character, Franklin, and his world and how he just evolved based off a real person, Rick Ross, who I actually got a chance, the real Rick Ross, who I got a chance to meet several times, and his story is phenomenal. It's more expansive than the show. But get back to the show is, you had a role in this show, Man Boy, right? Man Boy was the equivalent to Franklin on the other side.
Y'all
like literally like alpha versus alpha, two different worlds. I'm not backing down. You do things your way. He try to smooth shit out and negotiate, but you ain't really a negotiator. You know, you getting shit done, right? And whatever happens, happens. That's Man Boy, right? I love that character for you.
Thank you.
Because Man Boy was loyal. He was crazy than a motherfucker. He loved his family.
He was fair. He was fair.
Right.
You know?
You know what? He was fair.
He was fair.
Yeah.
You know? He had a code that he stuck by.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody don't play by the code. I'm so biased. Because you got to justify your character's actions as an actor.
Yeah.
And to me, Man Boy was the good guy. The character's following the bad guy.
Yes and no. No, Man Boy is not. He's a good guy to him. He's a good guy to him. He feels like he's doing a good thing for the hood.
What bad did Man Boy do?
Everything.
Like what?
Respond and do all kinds of shit you know was going to cause confusion.
What?
You and Franklin. That's why you dead.
All right. So, I'm dead because Franklin is a sociopath.
See?
Nah, it's like, if you think about it, right?
Okay,
open
let's
the scene.
This.
Open the angle. Spend too much time on this. But open the scene, Man Boy. He knew that his people went and robbed Franklin and him. He comes in. He said, yo, I know this happened. I apologize. I'm going to handle it. You know what? I turn the guy over to you. And I start buying product from y'all. I want to make it right. What did he say? If not, I'm going to kill you. Your family will be dead tomorrow.
Right.
Damn, bro. All right, cool. He dipped off. All right. I thought it was a peace treaty. So he leave, but that's fair. Later on in turn, you fast forward to the end of the season when his man was, you know, was unfair, jumping on my people. My people want me to retaliate. I'm like, nah, we ain't about to start a war because somebody beat your ass. Like, right. Let me talk to him. Talk to him. Hey, your man tripping. I also just, you know, I want to renegotiate prices. Nah, we ain't doing that. Leave if you don't want it. It's like, damn, I can't even be nice to this nigga. Like, this nigga's forcing my hand.
So you saying the game forced man boy to retaliate and get, because if you would have been allowed to be the fair.
When did he retaliate?
What I'm saying, when they killed your ass, you was coming back over there. Am I right?
Nah, he was ambitious. He was trying to figure out who the plug is. He was like, I want to meet the plug. How you going to be a hustler and you don't want to meet the plug? Franklin trying to meet the plug. Franklin met the plug.
But that's Franklin.
Yeah.
See, that's...
Man boy ain't allowed to be ambitious.
See, the game ain't fair.
They want man boy to be a foot soldier.
Yeah, nah.
It was funny.
But I'm saying, like, and then I saw you in Nine Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
Like I like that you're giving the audience and yourself opportunities to swing the bat differently.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you don't have to be a bad guy in everything, but you a good bad motherfucker, though.
Thank you. You know, that was the thing I was intentional with too. So coming from comedy, mm-hmm. doing some silly stuff, goofy stuff, I'm like, what can I do to kill that persona? Because that ain't me. Like, I was, that was a character. It's probably one of the biggest stretches I'm doing, like walking down the street, bumping into a pole, and, like, because
right.
I'm entertaining 12 year olds, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it was like, if I could do something in a villain, anti-hero type space, kind of kill that persona. And since I got that, that's all I get cast for now.
Bro,
God damn.
But listen, man, you and Terrence Howard, man,
we holding it down for the light skinned villains.
Light skinned villains, man. I remember one time I was doing a Fast Lane and Terrence Howard had came on and he was playing a bad guy, man, and he was so into character. No, you don't understand what being in character is. He was immersed into character that everybody was scared of him. He never broke character, food, lunch, nothing. He stayed in the character the whole time. The girl that was acting with him, just she wigged out. She thought he was crazy. He was like, man, I don't know why actress, man, is tripping, man.
She tripping,
I'm
man.
Like, look at you, though. Just look in the mirror and see what you look like.
I be thinking, man, I think that's childish when people be doing that. It's like, I respect everybody.
Can you
process.
Imagine? I'll give you an idea of a bad guy that was bananas. There's a couple, but Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Right.
He, when I say he bodied the Joker, it's no words.
Hands
Can
down.
You
yeah,
imagine
yeah.
if you had the scene with him as the Joker? Like, for a minute there, you'd be like, yo, we cut.
Yeah.
Cut. I'm going to say cut because this motherfucker about to stab me with this pencil. Have you had a role that you think was too far and you decided not to go there or something that you really, really wanted?
A role I really wanted?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all go for roles that we don't get.
Yeah,
but we're like,
for sure.
Shit,
I've learned that if I don't get it, it ain't for me. Something I wanted, I got to see it and know if I still really wanted it, mm-hmm. but I wanted it for just to kind of add to my versatility belt. Is a movie coming out soon. It's called... I ain't gonna say it right. Chevalier is about the Black Mozart,
mm-hmm.
and he's like his mom's a slave, his dad was a white an Englishman or something, and it takes place in the 18th century Mozart days with the white wigs and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like, that'd be dope to play something different than what I've done before.
Right.
I didn't get it, but I'm excited to see it. But I like to do. I want to do so many different things.
You will do it. You just need the time.
It's,
you know
it's time, yeah. And I'm patient, man. I'm patient, and I've taken a great liking to writing, so I could just make it for myself.
Yeah, bro. I mean, you actually a walking machine. And from hearing your story, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on Top Billing, because I wanted you to inspire some of these young artists that's out here, you know, whether they're actors or actresses or music guys or music girls, whatever, that you can always step outside your zone and go for something. Because you never know, like, you would never know where it's going to land. Like, you literally left VA. So, like, you stumbled into Vine, right? Figured that out. You definitely are a problem solver. You figure out what you want. You take the pluses and you get rid of the minuses and you keep it moving. That's a great quality to have that you have naturally.
Thank you.
And that is a key to success, because you're going to always figure something out for you.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you told the story of being happy. Because everybody thinks once you get money, you know, you're going to immediately have every day is daisies and lilies and flowers and you're just happy and God, you're going to moonwalk to the ATM every day. Yeah. Money is not necessarily guaranteed happiness.
It's not. But people ain't going to listen until they get the money and they figure it out. So, I wish that for everybody to get enough money where you could realize it don't make you happy. But yeah, that's true. And if you've been in that position, you know that to be true. It can alleviate a lot of stress. Right. But if your problems only come from a lack of money, you know how to solve them. But the problems that you have when you have money, it ain't that easy to solve them. You know, so it get deeper then.
It get deeper.
Yeah, more money, different problem.
Now, as far as that, well, you kind of touched based on an area that I really want to expand upon is like mental health, right?
Yeah.
And it's a huge issue in our community, especially with Black men. We have had so many tragedies, so many different levels of depression, so many different levels of mental health issues that go unaddressed.
Mm-hmm.
Some are small, some are really, really heavy. I want to ask you, how were you able to say, I'm incredibly sad doing what everybody thinks I should be doing, and be able to grab yourself out of that sadness or whatever was not fulfilling you and go in another direction? That's a hard turn for most people.
I've always been able to like look at myself in the mirror, be self-aware, and also just be aware of how I'm affected by other people. And using that stuff, I kind of just go to the drawing board when it comes to self-growth. So if I'm doing something that's not making me happy, I look in the mirror and I'm like, why am I doing this? And a lot of times it's ulterior motives, and a lot of times it's fueled by ego. And if that's the case, I try to kill it. You know what I mean? I try to cut it at the root. And that's what a lot of social media is wanting to have that top video, wanting to be admired by the people.
It's like a drug, man.
It's a drug. It really is a drug. I would wake up, 3-4 in the morning to post a video, because that's what time, because then it get to the East Coast, 6 in the morning, and then people could, it could have a full day,
a full
ride. And it's like, so many things come with it where you just constantly on your phone, and you do get that dopamine rush when something going good, and you do feel depressed when it's going bad. It really is an addiction. But realizing that it didn't make me happy is like, why am I doing it? All right, cool. Let me just try to figure out a way to move that makes me happy. And I watch a lot of I love getting insight from people like yourself that's been here before and been doing it for a while. And it's never really about the work, because the work is subjective. Some people, the work is subjective, but how you gain longevity and how you sustain your mental health throughout is what's important to me. And I look at the Actors Roundtable a lot. Actors Roundtable comes on, it's Hollywood Reporter, Actors Roundtable.
Yeah.
And they ask about the work, but they also ask about like things you would tell yourself or things you wish you knew. And the most common thing I see with most of, the OG actors is like, I wish I would have been happy. I wish I wouldn't make happiness contingent on success.
Oh my God, it's the worst.
Yeah, and it's like, I could see myself doing it. It's like it's a human quality. And it's like, cool, let me not make my happiness be dependent on gaining this, because that finish line is gonna continue to move.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, let me just figure out what's making me happy now, invest in that, and then let the work be something I do for additional pleasure, but not be my everything. So now with work, I don't work at the, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock. I spend that time with my family because that's what really makes me happy. You know, I give myself work hours. I don't work on the weekends. I just try to balance.
Yeah, man, it's really, really hard. It's just a tough, because like, I'll give you an example. For me, I think when I was first coming up in the game, your being on the show was your success. Yeah. And like, you know, for me, transitioning from MTV to come to Hollywood on an NBC deal was major. Mm-hmm. They was paying crazy. And I'm like,
network rates.
What? I was like, yo, I'm about to be on network TV, going from being a VJ to this. And it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Like, the money was there, but the thing that I thought was going to happen didn't happen right there. And I was like, oh, shit. Yo, I'm out here now. Like, I done came to L.A. and shit, and the show ain't work. I'm like, uh-oh, do I keep the money? Do I keep the money or whatever? But I totally agree with you. And I think the thing that helped me find my happiness is my wife and my kids.
Yeah,
I felt like my wife and my kids gave me something for me, because the game to me, it will just eat you up. Like, the game constantly pulls. The game you're chasing, pushing. But I always said that I want to have something that the game can't take from me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt my balance in my family, right? Yeah. And so I can still work and hustle and do that. But like you said, I make time. And I'm glad that you're young enough to have that knowledge or whatever epiphany, because it will keep you from going crazy.
It will. It ground you, man.
It grounds you.
It give you different purpose.
Absolutely.
It give you different purpose. Your kids don't care about, you know, what's on TV, especially at a younger age. They don't know about none of that. They want daddy to be there, you know, feed them and play with them and, you know, that type of stuff. And then your significant other, she wants you there. You know, all of that other stuff don't really mean nothing. I mean, it's great, but it's not end all.
I saw a clip that I thought was amazing, because, you know, I'm a big, big supporter of Black Daddy Magic, because, you know, we'll never get no,
hey, man.
No trophies. We don't get no trophies. You know, being a father and a daddy, you don't get no trophies, man. we just be like, well, do something else. You forgot the window is cracked, you know. So I saw you make this amazing thing in the yard for your son. Mm-hmm. Like, what? It's like a jungle gym. You made it by hand or something, or?
Yeah, not really.
Because it looked like you nice with the wood and the saw and all that.
I am. I've done a lot of other
You're
stuff.
You're competent too?
Something like that. So like I said, when I had the studio space,
okay,
I didn't have the money to build all these offices, but my sound guy knew how to, you know, he was an old country boy. He knew how to do
nice
some.
Nice with it.
He knew how to do some stuff. So I learned from him, and we built the offices, and I built all my sets. And so I learned the fundamentals of carpentry. And then doing pandemic, I just got a house. So it was a lot of stuff I wanted to do around the house, and things were shut down. People was charging ridiculous prices. And like you said earlier,
watch Melvin go to work.
I pride myself on being a problem solver. So I went to YouTube. I was like, how do I do this? But that jungle gym outside, it comes like all of the pieces. Now it was a bitch to put together.
Right.
But yeah, I put it together rather than hiring somebody. But the pieces are like pre-cut and stuff. But I've done other stuff. I built like a theater and decks and basketball courts. And
this
other
is
stuff
what I'm saying,
stuff.
Man. Yeah. You're a utility man, Melvin. Hey, man. And you ain't going, nobody going to box you in, bro.
If
I promise
the world
you.
Come to an end, nobody hiring us to act. We got to, you know what I mean? We got to be of some service to the world. Ain't nobody, you know what I mean, going to the theater in a post-apocalyptic world, but I'm going to be building something.
But you'll be out here, but, man, if you need a jungle gym, Melvin got you.
I'm going to start a colony. I'm gonna start a colony. I'm gonna be the president. I'm building stuff. Yeah.
What's
I'm gonna turn a man boy in a zombie world.
That's great. My man said I'm gonna be out here selling wood, man. And it's so funny that you talk about, like, because the pandemic made everyone be on the same playing field at the same time, because everything stopped. It wasn't no movies, like you said. You couldn't flex on Instagram, really. Well, you can't say you was in Dubai unless you was already there, because you couldn't get out the country, right? So during that time, what was the most valuable lesson or valuable thing that you keep with you moving forward from the pandemic?
I guess I would say the time I spent with my family.
Yeah.
I was lucky in a sense, though. So when the pandemic hit, I just bought a house. And I bought a house on Valentine's Day. pandemic hit in like March. Mm-hmm. My baby was born in May. Mm-hmm. I was doing Snowfall. Snowfall got on hiatus, I don't know, sometime for May, April or something, maybe February. But then I did Nine Perfect Strangers. So in July, we went to Australia to shoot Nine Perfect Strangers. So I was in Australia for 6 months and then high pandemic there. So I was good. I was able to work out into the world, no mask. My kid could see people's expressions and I'm just focusing on, you know, him, my fiance. So that part of the early part of the pandemic was different. But then when I came back home, you know, I had to kind of adjust to the world,
was
especially not being having a mask. Yeah, it was like we were more so cautious than anybody else because people had got used to it here. It was already here for 6 months. So after a while, it was like, all right, man, I ain't really tripping like that. But we just came out from Australia coming back into it. So it was like we were super guarded. Anytime we had somebody at the house, we was doing like COVID tests.
Yeah, I was doing that.
Yeah, I had the home test. I would have the nurses come to the house if I had any type of event. And it was just, I'm like a hypochondriac. If I think it could go wrong, I mean, if it could go wrong, I think it's going to go wrong.
Right, so I'd
be wanting to, you know what I mean, check all the boxes off. But if I was able to spend so much time, you know, with my family, so.
Yeah, that was actually one of the most beautiful things about it was just, you know, being present. Do you know what I mean? Where you could just really kick it with your kids and like, you know, you really wasn't going nowhere really.
Yeah.
So y'all had to know each other and kind of like each other a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I feel like I learned my kids better in those, 10 months than they whole life.
Yeah.
Because I was with them every day. I said, I know you lying. I know a good lie now. You know,
yeah.
So it was definitely a valuable time for me as well. And now next, what are you looking for moving forward? Like, what would be a nice little something that you could do? The Melvin Gregg story, keep adding pieces.
Like I said, I've been heavily writing right now. I got three features, a pilot. I had an HGTV type show in the works, but then it might have just got cut in this last Google employee cut. My point person got fired, so we gonna figure out what happened. That's why you can't attach your happiness to success out here.
Oh my God,
it's fickle. But like I know that, so when it happened, I was like, all right, cool. I'm sorry you lost your job. That's more of my concern than the show. Whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I got projects. I want to do one of the projects. I don't want to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to direct it. I think it'd be a great project for me to, you know, direct. And then I have a rom-com that I wrote that I'm excited to do. So, yeah, a good step away from the bad guy.
Yeah, you can go back to the bad guy.
I do. I love a villain role. But yeah, you just got to diversify. You can't stay in one box too long. At one point, I was a basketball guy. I was doing every basketball movie that, you know, required.
I don't know why Hollywood is like that. If you do one thing really good, every time the basketball athlete, good-looking guy.
You're the go-to. You're the go-to. And it's cool. People talk about being typecasted. You typecasted, you being casted. Do that until you got enough clout where you could transition that into maybe you doing an indie film, but because you then got clouded out in the basketball space, they let you do something else. So it's like typecasted is casted. You go run with it until you could do something else. So that's what I did.
That.
Bad guy now, you know, do some wrong. I want to do more comedies though. Comedy
bro,
space
you
is
funny,
wide open.
Bro, man.
Thank you.
Just save some roles for me because I'm still funny.
Nah, for sure,
don't play no games,
no
Melvin.
No question.
Because I see you coming. You gangster. You got the man boy goddamn attitude mixed with some comedic flavor. And you're a carpenter, too.
I'm a carpenter,
you might
man.
Build your own movie set and everything.
I build a whole set. You know, cut down costs.
He make a whole $25 million movie for $15,000.
You
don't need nobody. Got your own. You shoot everything on the phone.
Should take 5 years to make.
I got one for you. So on our show, Top Billing, we always ask our guests. This section of the show is called All Facts, All Facts. We ask a question and you give us all facts. Tarek, okay. Should we hit him? Should we hit him with it? Let's hit him with it. All right, y'all. Top Billing, All Facts for Melvin Gregg. Melvin, you get to be directed by three of your favorite directors of all time. Who would they be and why?
I've been lucky to work with some great directors so far. I want to do a Tarantino film.
Ha! Chu in the building. I love
dialogue, and I love the violence too.
It's good. It's a lot of good directors out there, boy. Shoot
your
shot.
You never know. You might talk it into happening.
My recollective memory is bad. Spielberg, just because it's Spielberg, man. Like, he's a genius in it, too.
What about action? You don't want to go no action?
I do want to go action, man. If I'm going action, I want to say Christopher Nolan. But as long as it ain't like no too crazy stuff, like, you know what I mean? That last one was a lot. Tenet?
Yeah.
That was too much. But I love Interstellar.
Yeah. Right.
Guy Ritchie, maybe.
Yeah. He got style.
He likes style. Let me be one of those French Pikeys or something. British Pikeys or whatever. Like, yeah, Brad Pitt.
Yeah, Brad.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. I got one. I got three. All right, I'm gonna give you an easier one, because you could be you a leading man too. You know what I mean?
We gotta say
what it is. So I'm gonna give you three of your co-stars. You give it all facts. Three, you get to pick for your next three projects who you gonna work with. Yeah, get your weight up, ladies, all the actresses out in Hollywood. Melvin is putting you on his list. Let's go. All facts. Three co-stars. Different types of movies.
You can be able to cut this up?
Yeah, we can cut it up. We'll cut it. Pick something good, man. Don't play with your movie star career. You got to have a co-star that.
I know, man.
Morris Chestnut always got a stallion with him. He got his list.
Yeah, he do.
He always keeps stallions. Who else? Michael Ealy. Killing them every time you see Mike. I think it's the green eyes or the blue eye. I don't know what color his goddamn eyes is, but he always have a beautiful girl with him. And then Wesley Snipes taught me this: you got to put it in the contract that the co-star be bananas.
Yeah.
Bananas. So you got to put it in your contract. You got to have at least two. Come on now, you Melvin Gray.
It won't be for those reasons though, man. I'm an artist.
Go by artistry.
But niggas
don't want to hear that.
I know they don't, man. They want to know who I think the baddest
one is. Who the baddest bitch in the game? That's what niggas want to hear. Now you can do the artist shit because you got your lady at home. We're not trying to mess up the crib. Man, just go by talent. Based on talent. Let's go by talent. Jesus Christ. The most boring answer ever.
I know, man.
Christ. I don't even know.
I love Nicole Beharie as an actress.
Okay.
I think she's amazing.
Okay. One. Boom. You want me to help you?
Yeah. Damn. Throw them out there for me.
I'll throw you one.
What? I can't say no.
You can say
throw me
no.
When I'm like, nah.
Nah, you could say no, but I'm going to throw you, like, actresses right now that's really, really cooking that, like, could be in a rom-com or be, you know, an accomplice to you in an action joint. Let's go. What about Margot Robbie? She just did Babylon. She played.
Oh, Margot Robbie's a beast.
She's a beast. She's bananas.
That's the Will Smith route.
Yeah, she's like, woof.
That's the Will Smith route.
Another actress that I know.
You know, Will always got like a white girl or a Spanish girl in his movies.
Yeah, he got.
He say the world. That's how he make it internationally appealing. I said, this the Will formula, huh?
See, you be figuring out everything.
I said,
that's how you get it.
Every time he save the world. With either a white girl or a Spanish, somebody that's not black, to make it not a black movie.
Right.
I see what you're doing here, Will. I see what you're doing. You always saving the world and end up lonely. All right.
Because he can't have nobody in the new world.
Yeah, he's lonely. Deep down, he's always a lonely man. But it's a surface level relationship that he try to find some value in. If it's not a woman, it's a dog. or a robot.
A robot.
Or Martin.
Him and Martin. I'll give you one more. I gave you a Margot Robbie. She's on fire. She killed it. You know who else I love that is comedic and a bomb actress as well? Regina Hall.
I love Regina.
Regina could do everything. She's like, she is the, what would be the male counterpart of Regina Hall?
Regina is hard.
It's hard because she can play serious comedy.
Yeah.
To Taraji as well.
I would have said Regina, but I just worked with her. So.
Oh, you already did?
Yeah, now I'm a perfect stranger, so I thought you meant like people I hadn't worked with. But nah, Regina family. Like, she babysit my kid type family. Yeah,
good people.
Yeah, and I would love to do a project with her. But yeah, I thought, you know, we were talking about people.
But what about somebody with, like, you haven't worked with? Like, let's see. Saldana. What about her?
Zoe Saldana?
Zoe, yeah.
Yeah, she could what color? She could be red. She's been every color.
Yeah.
Let's make her red in this one.
Yeah.
She was blue. She was green. They made her black for the one joint.
She been every color.
She been every color. And smashed at all of them. Except for when she was Nina Simone when they made her black.
Right.
Other than that, she been killing it.
Hey, man, can you relax?
How we gonna ignore it like it ain't happening? But nah, she's a beast. She's Avatar. Come on, 2 billion.
Come on now.
Throw me an Avatar. Paint me blue. I got dreads. She's already is perfect.
You good?
James Cameron, put him on my director list.
How you not gonna say James Cameron or Michael Bay?
My recollective memory when I say that is like drawing stuff.
Do you smoke weed?
I don't smoke.
You don't. This is just a natural high you have. Because you look like you used to smoke at one point.
Damn. I guess, man.
He's like, shit.
What does that look like? You like a retired smoker, nigga. Your lips multicolor.
When your lips purple, you used to smoke. You
know? Yeah, no, nah, no. Nah.
When it got right
weed,
down to the
weed
bottom.
Weed fucked me up.
Right.
It's like, I don't even remember what we was talking about.
Man, listen, bro. That's because you, back in the day, when you was smoking weed, all them brain cells got fried.
Damn, I was never
You never smoked?
I've smoked, but I hated it. It's like, every time I smoke, I regret that I did it. Like, why the fuck I do this? Sober up. Sober up. Like, it's bad. I think it's because I'm so, like, analytical in a sense. Like, I'm always in my head. I was talking to my mom about this earlier. I'm never really, I'm present in the moment.
Okay.
But it's partially autopilot a lot of the time. So if you ask me to, you know, pull back something that happened, I probably wasn't really there. Physically, I was there. I don't want this to sound hella meta, but my brain wasn't 100% in the moment, so I might not be able to recollect this memory as easy as possible.
So do you, will you know you was on Top Billing?
You
know.
And then, 3 years?
You ain't
damn, I was on Top Billing, right? Damn.
Are you gonna remember all these funny moments or that you said how many colors Zoe Saldana was? That's a classic funny moment on
Thank
Top
Thank you.
And I never I don't and Will nah, can never love not. Anybody but animals and Spanish
he
can. And white.
He chicks. Just know the formula.
He know the formula to
he know
success.
The formula, man. He's smart. I was looking at that formula. I can't go straight to that formula though.
Right.
You see he had Vivica Fox first, you know, gotta I can't do it. I gotta have my black women for at least 3-4 projects before I kind of
venture out.
So they be like, we know what he doing. He trying to get the bag, but we know where his home is. Yeah, I gotta
hey,
set
everybody.
The stage.
Hey, listen, I wanna thank you so much for making time to kick it with me, bro.
Of course, man.
And for our audience to get to know a very talented brother that knows how to figure it out, that knows how to chase a dream, how to get it back and be happy at the same time. That's a
Appreciate
blessing, bro.
That, man.
God
love,
bless you.
Love.
Only on Top Billing. Melvin Gregg, everybody. Make sure you follow him on all his social media platforms. And make sure you check out season 6 of Snowfall.
Yeah.
He got the script and he won't let us know what it is.
I ain't gonna read it.
Peace.
Milk is chilling. This is chilling. What more can I say? Top Billing.